David Morgan pens the Morgan Report, covers economic news, overall financial issues on the global economy. Welcome back, David Morgan.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. Great to be back.
Great to have you back with us. And we haven't really seen that breakout we've been looking for in the silver sector for over a year, but it looks like it's winding up for a big move. Is it the U.S. dollar that's keeping us in check?
Could say a lot of things. I mean, really, to know for a fact is impossible. I mean, I am a strong student of the markets, as you know, and really the dollar is important, and certainly there's arguments to be made that gold is the inverse of the dollar. If you go back to Ian McAvity, which is now deceased, but a good friend and colleague at the time, he would take a gold chart and flip it upside down, stick a dollar chart on top of that, and it pretty much matched. However, I really think, upon further study, that the dollar is secondary to the stock market. Gold actually is a barometer of the overall economic conditions. So gold is more fundamentally uncorrelated or reverse correlated to the stock market, even more so than the U.S. dollar.
And I think the last few years have shown us this is the longest stretch I think most analysts are pointing to now since shares started trading on the New York Stock Exchange over 120 years ago. Something has got to give. If you look at it even in a logarithmic chart, this thing is practically vertical since 2009. Eventually, people are going to need that insurance, portfolio insurance. What do you think is going to turn them back to the metal?
Well, just that. I mean, it's going to be something that's a strong enough, in-your-face type of a situation, probably financially. It could be war. It could be, food crash. I mean, there are a lot of variables, but most likely it would be something financially. So until the stock market really starts a downtrend in earnest, I don't think you're going to see much in the gold market on the upside, with the caveat of what I just gave. I mean, if there was a geopolitical event, I mean, if there was a war breakout or some, you know, even maybe a natural, quote-unquote, natural disaster, I mean, certainly it'd have to be a huge one. If there was another, you know, 9/11 type of situation, I mean, any of those things could trigger the gold market without a financial situation, and that we can't rule those out. But basically, yeah, it'd be a financial conundrum that all of a sudden, but at a point in time, there's a realization that, you know what, the stock market has peaked, it's not coming back, I'm overexposed, and by that time, a lot of the gold bugs would have already been back into the market, and the market and gold would start to show. And just to back up our backup, gold is the most negatively correlated asset to the stock market.
You talked about, well, something's going to lead us to that tipping point, right? That chaotic moment. We're going to look back and say, well, that was probably it. And there might be a couple on the horizon. I mean, we just heard this week Washington is ratcheting up the stakes here in this potential trade war with our top four trade partners, China, of course, the EU, Canada, and Mexico. They've just announced they're taking it from $50 billion, you may have read, to $200 billion in this cold trade war. Do you see this as just an irrelevant event, or could that lead us to the tipping point?
Oh, I think it could lead us to the tipping point. I mean, anyone that studied Austrian school economics, such as myself, knows that trade wars don't work. If you look at it, try to be objective. I can't, but I'll try. You know, if you've got a trading partner and they're putting a big tariff to benefit them and you don't have one, it sort of makes sense. Well, if you're going to do that to me, I'm going to do it back to you and level the playing field. So from a perspective of what's fair, that may make sense. But again, it doesn't work. So what really happens in trying to level the playing field is you get more and more distortions in the marketplace. And this is what we don't need. And then you start to get a situation that goes back to the 1930s with the Smoot-Hartley Act, which is basically trade war. And it just makes things worse, which basically grinds all the economies down. So it doesn't really help anybody. I mean, fair trade is basically free trade. Whatever the commodity or the end product or the service is, the country that has that is the one that determines what the price is. And the country's management, meaning their government, stays out of it. So it's a trade between, let's say, an entity such as a corporation or an individual within a certain jurisdiction that sets the price. And there isn't any, of course, today with the government's worldwide that basically are taking more and more control of personal effects of everybody. I mean, from, this nonstop, incessant spying on everybody for everything they think, do, and say exacerbates the problem because it makes it even more difficult to do anything independently. Everything seems to have a big brother looking over their shoulder and getting into the equation at one point or another.
Had a couple of dissenting views from top guests here on the show. One, of course, Boston University professor Lawrence Kotlikoff, and, of course, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts. You know, like yourself, they have a very solid background in the business and government realms, and they take a more of a stance that this could be quite harmful to the United States, that maybe unlike the Smoot-Hawley Act, three generations, maybe more in the past, our economy today is not a resilient or manufacturing-based strong enough to sustain this type of trade war.
You know, I think it'll be detrimental to all parties, and probably the U.S. more than Trump realizes, so... Maybe I wasn't clear. I mean, it might look good on the surface that it makes things more fair, quote unquote, more fair, but in reality, it's going to hurt everybody involved.
But, you know, we've also had two other big names you'll recognize right off the top, money manager in Florida and Reno, Nevada, as well as, of course, Martin Armstrong, the Forecaster movie and really interesting character in these markets. And what we've noticed over the past few years is that these two guests have their finger on the pulse of U.S. equities better than our top 50 people, and neither are terribly concerned by the volatility or a potential bear market in equities. If they're right, that might put this thesis, this idea of a gold market and silver market bull, put it on hold if U.S. shares, you know, double from here?
Oh, yeah. I think it would. Louis Navalier, as you say, is probably one of the leaders. I mean, I've followed him for years. I really don't look at his stuff that much anymore, but certainly, you know, he's I wouldn't say has a hot hand, because a hot hand implies that, you know, it's a temporary event. No, he pretty much gets it right almost always. So, and I don't know what they're seeing differently than what I'm seeing, because the basics of a PE, I mean, any metric you use, the stock market is overvalued, and that's why I have a hard time saying that could go a lot further. But, you know, the irrational exuberance, I mean, when Greenspan made that statement, I remember the LA Times took a whole front of the business section and made this huge graph, so it was, you know, newspaper size sheet, whatever they are, what are they, 18 by 24, I don't know, the big. And that graph was only about half as high. It was like going straight up, like you just mentioned at the beginning of the show. And yet that was the halfway point for the NASDAQ. You know, it was like at 2,500. The NASDAQ went to 5,000 in that bull market in the 2000s. So can we go higher? Yes. Will we go higher? I don't know. I really doubt it. I just don't see what they do. Now, I can see, you know, a run to the dollar. I can see a lot of things happening that would maybe pause the gold market somewhat, but if you go to a liquidity squeeze where people seek safety, the stock market isn't it. Even the bond market at the end of these great inflation cycles isn't it. The only thing that's it before it, and I'm trying to be funny here, the only thing it before gold is currency, which means the most trusted currency, which means in this case the U.S. dollar. So you could see a big move in the dollar, which, you know, the dollar's been moving up, as we both know, recently, before the run to gold. In fact, that's exactly what I expect to see. But what I would see as confirmation is that the Dow theory put a sell signal on, that the S&P 500 is below the 50 and 200-day moving average and moving down, and these type of things. And then the dollar's going up, and of course people say, well, if the dollar's so strong, you know, why isn't it working in the markets or in the stock market and bond market? The answer to that question is very simple. There's been a break in trust on what's a safe place to be. And the safest place to be for most people's understanding is physical currency. However, once the faith is lost in that, which happens in these great inflations, is then the run to gold begins. And once that run to gold begins, it really can't be stopped. It's a psychological event. It isn't 100% of the population. It's like 1.5%, 2%, 3% at the most usually. But that's all it takes, because once someone starts running to, the wheelbarrow full of currency and goes in and negotiate the price of the pieces of paper, you know, someone dumps out the currency on the sidewalk and steals a wheelbarrow because it's more valuable. Now, I'm making an extreme case here. I do not expect to see that in the U.S. dollar whatsoever. What I do expect is enough of a loss of faith for a dramatic move to take place in the gold. That's what I expect. I use the hyperinflation example to set it up so that people listening to the show can understand that there's a point in time where there's the loss of faith is what we're talking about, confidence. It's basic confidence gain. Anybody from Martin Armstrong, Louis Navalier, any of these people all recognize that. They're all well aware of it. And the argument really isn't, is that the truth or not? The argument becomes of how much longer can the charade go on? And I have been remiss to say, look, I thought it happened before now. People such as Armstrong and others have a different view, and I have to tip my hat. They're right. You know, this thing's going on further than I ever expected it to.
It's no hyperbole when you bring up the wheelbarrow being much more valuable than $100 bills or marks, because you're pulling that from the Weimar episode, and it's a case in point. But if you take a look at the interest rates that we've seen, we've got another friend of the show who does some fantastic statistical work, like the Morgan Report and others, that has juxtaposed the rate cycle against U.S. equities. It's virtually perfect correlation, almost, between the end of these rate cycles and the end of major bull markets in equities. There's no way you could use the metric as a timing technique, nor do we recommend that to any of our subscribers or listeners today. Build a portfolio, balance that portfolio, and tinker with it if you want, but that's all we're suggesting here. Do you agree that now that rates are moving up, it really is just a matter of time before we get that inverted yield curve, maybe as soon as 2019? That might just send the herd searching for safe haven assets.
Oh, Chris, that's an excellent point. I totally agree. I've read two of those studies, and I'll give the timing. I mean, based on the current, nothing's linear in the world hardly. But anyway, it looks like, as you said, 2019. So we probably have, according to the second study I read twice, it was like a year and a half to go, which seems excessively long to me because I guess I'm getting a little anxious because this, sideways market of metals has hung on for so long and I don't like it. But that's, markets do what the markets do, not what I want them. And of course, I've always, performed my trades basis that, not what I want, what the market's saying. So yeah, I think if nothing else changes, that alone would probably take it down. And it could be, as I say, unfortunately, the year anyway. And so be it. Again, I don't control the market. The market does what the market does.
I'm sure you've also noticed there's an interesting pattern in the yellow metal back to 2009. I'm sure you'll recall that was the bottom there of the Great Recession, as they call it, and it was barely a blip in gold, whereas virtually every other asset class collapsed. From that point, we saw the yellow metal more than double from 2009 through 2011. Fast forward to today on a weekly chart, you've got virtually the identical chart pattern. Of course, history doesn't always repeat. Sometimes it rhymes.
The third leg up in almost any bull market, that's the one I referred to a while back, is usually the longest in price appreciation, but not necessarily the longest in time duration. So the third leg up is the one, if you go by Elliott wave theory, it could be the fifth wave. There's a wave up, a wave down, a wave up, a wave down, and the last final leg up. That's what I think we're going to see in the gold market. So when it starts, and by the way, I wanted to add that gold usually anticipates, or markets generally anticipate the future. So let's say that this yield curve inverts, a year and a half from now. Gold could start up 6 months before that because it's anticipating this inverse in the yield curve. So you could see it starting to move. And then it gets to the acceleration point, which is what you see in the stock market for quite some time. And then you get this near vertical rise, which we saw in gold in 2011, and you saw it particularly in silver. I mean, silver, if you look at the chart back in 2009 to 2011, you see those last few months, it really accelerated. I mean, I remember telling people, please, if you've got to buy silver, don't spend more than 35, and don't buy all that you want. This is a parabolic move, and parabolic moves usually don't last that long. However, look at the stock market, it's gone on again further than I expected. So I think those are the points that we're going to see this next leg up probably significantly higher than what we've seen in the past. But I don't expect it to be, a 10-year market or, I don't expect it to be much longer than probably at the final phase, 6 months. And, well, David, what's that mean? And the answer is I don't know precisely. But generally speaking, the idea would be, let's say gold finally makes it to 2,500. And from 2,500 to 7,500, as an example, that last tripling only takes a matter of like 4 months, whereas it might take from now until the end of 2019, early 2020 before it gets to 2,500.
We've just seen that play out in the cryptos. You know, December, 2017, we saw Bitcoin in just a matter of weeks run from 7,000-8,000 to right at 20,000. Of course, that's a faster moving market than the precious metals. So that matches right up with your idea of about 5-6 months. I mean, you'd see a blow off and all the more reason to build that portfolio that we've been talking about. It just tends to beat out 90% of the trading strategies out there.
You know, my premise has always been that I specialize in the resource sector, not just gold and silver, but across the board. We're first in rare earth elements, one of the first in cobalt, first in the energy metals. We like vanadium. There's only one company that I like. Vanadium seems to be making a new high every day. And it's a portion of your portfolio. So if you're a general stock investor, and you don't have exposure to resources, you would subscribe to our service because you need that, you know, 10 to 20% coverage that will basically help your portfolio do even better. Now, on a gold basis only, I think you can just go with like a 10% gold-weighted amount without ever worrying about investing in the equities. But best balanced portfolio for all seasons is about a 20% exposure to gold. And I did an interview with Jeff Christian of CPM Group, who many feel sort of anti-gold, but I find Jeff to be fairly objective, actually. So Jeff and I did an interview at the PDAC, and he outlined that all portfolios require about that amount of gold. I did it with Nick Bereshiff, the founder of BGM Group, who also has approximately the same number. And then I also talked with David Harquill, who's the CEO of Franco-Nevada, but he's also the chairman of the World Gold Council. And Harquill has gone as far as to invite Alan Greenspan to talk about gold and its importance and its weighting required to central banks and some fund managers. And that did take place. And my correspondence with Mr. Harquill and his World Gold Council position was it was viewed quite favorably. But yet you're not seeing, you know, this talked about very often. So there is a update on my blog that has that video. It was a lot of work. It was my dime. It was, you know, I flew there on my cost. I did the interview on my cost. Film crew was on my cost. But yet I'm doing this as a public service announcement because I see a day, Chris, where some of these very well-heeled people that have a, you know, let's say a $5 million stock portfolio or a $10 million stock portfolio. And if this thing goes where I think it could, I'm not saying would, could, and they have no gold exposure at all, they're going to be pretty upset if their friend did because their money manager was smart enough to have a 10% or 20% weighting in gold. And basically they've broken even or done even better than that because of the gold exposure. So it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, bad times are ahead or anything like that. What it does mean is that most people will not admit that gold is required to balance a portfolio properly.
Start off with that physical component and then build in the equities with folks like yourself, my Alpha Stocks newsletter, and especially Peter's at the Gold Forecaster. These are just some resources for people who, you know what, the alpha effect, which we talk about the beta, that keeps you safe. It's the alpha that boosts you over the top. If you're looking for 10, 15, 20% overall returns and more, you can't just toss darts. You've got to crunch the numbers. Would you like to tell people just a little bit more about your services?
Best thing it is, it's got our free e-letter, and that's obtained at themorganreport.com. Just give us a first name and an email address, and you'll be up. And I do a weekly perspective wrapping up the financial markets with a comment on gold and silver almost every week. So that's free and fun for everybody. And if you want to explore more on the website, feel free to do so.
Looking forward to having you back.
Thanks for having me, Chris.